I want to speak to you today about investments. Aren't you glad? And I wish I could tell you I have all of the financial savvy of Dave Ramsey, but I can't. And like many of you, I need good advice in this area of life. If I'm going to get financial advice, I know this. I want to go to a guy who really knows money. I want to get it from somebody who has had it and who's been successful with it. Now, you are that way too, aren't you? Suppose we had a two-week workshop on how to handle wealth here at Central. And the first week we had somebody come who's just a local name, and he was going to come speak about how to handle wealth. And then the next week we were going to have some guy named Bill Gates here. So which week do you think would have the bigger crowd of those two? Probably the Bill Gates week. And that would be because when we have a choice, we want someone who's had some cashola to talk to us about money. We would expect someone like that has learned something, right? Well, I want to tell you, there is a guy like that that we could learn from today. King Solomon was a guy like that. He knew about money. In fact, listen to what God promised King Solomon. Let's start this off with that. 2 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 12. Here's what God told him. I will also give you wealth, riches, and honor such as no king who was before you ever had, and none after you will have. That's a lot. 1 Kings 4:26, we read this. Solomon had 4,000 stalls for chariot horses and 12,000 horses. That's a lot of horses. 1 Kings 10, all King Solomon's goblets were gold. All the household articles in the palace of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Nothing was made of silver because silver was considered of little value in Solomon's days. 1 Kings 10:23, King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. Question, young people, was King Solomon rich? Yes. All right, yes, more rich than anybody before him or after. Listen to what he writes about what he did. He says, I undertook great projects, houses, vineyards, gardens and parks, reservoirs, slaves, herds and flocks, silver and gold, the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired singers, a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Man, this guy was living the American dream, wasn't he? Sort of, just not in America. I denied myself nothing I desired. You think he'd be happy. Listen to what he concluded then in Ecclesiastes, that book that the kids just mentioned. Okay, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 11. He says this, yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So what advice does Solomon give? What does Solomon have to say about investing and accumulating and financial security in a portfolio? That's in Ecclesiastes 2 also, verse 18. He says, I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. Chapter 5, verse 15, he kind of summarizes it this way. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, and so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. And that's why, I know I've said this before, there are no U-Haul trailers in funeral processions. All right? Unless they are an anxious relative. Unfortunately, that's how some people show up. Now, the point of all of this and what Solomon said isn't that wealth is bad. In fact, Who was it that made Solomon wealthy? Who made him rich? That was God. That would be God. He's the one that did that. And when Jesus talks about making great gain, Jesus doesn't say that wealth is bad. In fact, he even compares the kingdom of heaven to a treasure, to say it's a good thing. Matthew 6, for instance. So it seems fitting to me that we would talk about being good investors of wealth. I want to give credit where credit is due today. I acquired a book written by Randy Alcorn a few years back. Copies of that book were passed out to everybody at the funeral of Roy Weiss. His family passed out copies of this book by Randy Alcorn, encouraging people to read it. Well, I read it, I liked it, and I thought there were some great concepts in it that fit well with what we're doing this month. In fact, if you miss these concepts, all is lost. Or you could get these concepts, and I think there is potential in this to revolutionize the way all of us relate to material things. My guess is all of us could use a big drink of that. We actually started with these things last week, and they all point to one easy statement. I could say everything I want to say here in the next 25 minutes with one easy statement, and that is that you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Got that? You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. That's all I need to say. We could probably just leave right now. You're thinking, okay, let's go. Well, we need to keep one thing clear as we talk about this, and that is that this is not just talking about money and what you do with money. The chances are you didn't come here this morning so that you could feel harassed about your money. No, this is about your life, and this is about what you are doing with your life. This is about you and Jesus Christ and your relationship with Him. Everything that you do with everything that you have. That's what we're talking about. So especially if life in Jesus is a new idea to you this morning, let me keep pointing you to that important subject. Where are you investing your life? You see, I think that you're here this morning. No matter who you are, I got this idea that you're here this morning because that question really matters to you. What you're doing with your life matters to you. And let me give you a spoiler alert here. Later on, we're going to ask you to place your life into Jesus' hands and to allow Him to be master of everything that you have. So you can anticipate that that's something we're going to do, because we want you to have something that will last forever. Now, I said a moment ago that the Scriptures don't teach that we're supposed to not seek gain. Jesus didn't say not to make progress, not to seek a return. In fact, He said just the opposite. Luke 12, verse 33, listen to what Jesus said. Sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. Provide purses for yourselves that won't wear out. It's not Vera Bradley, ladies. He's talking about something else. We're not supposed to not handle wealth. We're not supposed to not invest. In fact, the choice has already been made for you, hasn't it? How many of you have material goods? You're wearing clothes on your back. You got here somehow today. You're going to eat probably today. You have these things already. That choice has been made for you. The choice that we have is whether we're going to take those things and invest them wisely or stupidly. That's the choice. Jesus gives us this choice. We can have treasures on earth, or we can have treasures from the earth invested so that they'll become treasures in heaven. Which would you rather have this morning? Doesn't this sound like an investment sales pitch? But which would you rather have? Treasures on earth that stay on earth, or treasures in heaven that will last forever? The answer is treasures in heaven. All right. Well, to help us make that choice, I want to give you some facts, just like good old Joe Friday used to do on Dragnet, just the facts, ma'am. Here they are. Here's just the facts. And if you'll think about them, if you'll accept that they're true, and if you'll act on them, I believe this has the potential to revolutionize your world. I really believe that. Last week, there were a couple of these things that we already covered, that we already started with. One of those was that God owns everything and that we are His stewards. Remember what a steward is? Someone tell me, what's the word for a steward? caretaker. Being a steward means I get to take care of God's stuff. He lets me borrow it. I become a caretaker. That's what it means. And that means I don't own even myself, let alone the stuff that I call mine. It all belongs to God, and that covers every resource in my life, my time, my energy, my experience, my talent, my money, my relationships, everything that I could put in the bank, everything that I could list on my resume, everything that I can include in a scrapbook of my life already belongs to God. I'm just a caretaker, and I get to use it. Another important concept we talked about is the way that my heart will always go where I put God's resources. Because Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's the order it goes in. You know those stock market tickers that go along the bottom of the TV screen on certain news channels? Some of you maybe watch those. If you don't have any money invested in stocks, you probably don't think it's a big deal. But I'll bet that if you happen to invest, $100,000, as long as we're dreaming, if you invest $100,000 into Apple stock and that ticker was going across the bottom of the screen but Apple hadn't come up yet, I'll bet you'd hang around to see when Apple came, whether it was going up or down. And the reason for that's really simple. It's because your heart follows where you've placed your treasure. Wherever you invest God's resources, your time, your energy, experience, talent, money, relationships, that's where your heart's naturally going to follow. That's the thing that you're going to dream about. That's the thing that you're going to pray about. That's the thing that you're going to think about. When you rise up in the morning and you concern yourself with that, you're going to make your plans around that. You're going to check on that. It'll affect your outlook on life. It'll affect your choices every day. It'll even affect the mood that you choose to be in, where you have invested those resources. So let's go on from there and add a few more facts this morning, some important concepts that I think can shape this whole view we have of being stewards of God's things. Here's the first one, and that is to remember this, that heaven, not earth, is my home. Amen? Heaven, not earth. Let's say that you're a U.S. citizen, and you get a job overseas, Saudi Arabia, selling, I don't know, Pepsi. Jim Horn wanted me to say Coke. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say Pepsi. So you're selling Pepsi overseas in Saudi Arabia, and you're able to make quite a bit of money. You're going to be there just a temporary thing. You're going to be there 3 months, and then you're going to come back home. And the rule is that you can't accumulate things and then take them out of Saudi Arabia back home with you. Now, you can take your paycheck and send it home to the bank, or you could buy stuff and not take it with you when you leave. Now, if that's the circumstances, how many of you would buy a whole bunch of stuff and store it up in your hotel room? Figs and gold and jewelry and linens and all that. Would you buy up a bunch of stuff? Or would you send it on to your bank so that when you got home, it would be waiting there for you? I think you see where this is going, don't you? Look at Hebrews 11, verse 13, where it talks about the people who were great heroes of the faith and the way that they lived their lives on earth. It says about them, they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Paul reminds the Philippians and us today, our citizenship is where? Heaven. Our citizenship is in heaven. I just traveled across the borders of a couple countries back and forth in the last couple days. Citizenship is a big deal. They're real interested in where you're a citizen as you cross borders. It's really important that we remember where our real citizenship is. What if you knew that your stay in this life is temporary. What if you knew that when you leave this place, you won't be able to take anything from this place with you? And what if you were able somehow to send ahead your wealth to the place that was really your home so that when you got there, it would be waiting for you when you arrived? What would you do with it? You and I both know those facts are true, aren't they? That this life is temporary, no matter who you are. I can guarantee you that. You won't be able to take anything material with you when you leave this life, no matter where you go. I can guarantee you that. Somebody asked when J.D. Rockefeller died, how much did he leave behind? His lawyer's response was, all of it. And Jesus tells us there is a way to send your wealth ahead to the place that is really your home so that when you arrive there, it will be waiting. Heaven, not earth, is my home. Here's another fact to put on the list, and that is that I should live for the line, not for the dot. Let me explain that real quickly. I just did not like geometry, by the way. I don't know why we needed to learn all those theorems that I've forgotten since then, but I did learn this, the difference between a line and a dot. In a plane, a point in a plane, that dot is called a point. There's a picture of one right there. Here's a close-up. All right. And if you arrange that little tiny point in a series, in a linear fashion, we call that a line. And the arrows on the end of the line are representative of the fact that theoretically a line goes on forever. There's no end to a line. If it ends, it's called a line segment or array. But it goes on forever. See, that geometry did do me some good. There is a big difference, isn't there, between a dot and a line. And by comparison, that dot is really small and insignificant. Let me ask you this morning, which one are you living for in this life? So here's what Hebrews 11 also says about Moses, that Moses chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. Now, I want to encourage you this morning as you think about where you're investing all that God gives to you to think ahead more than 50 years, think ahead 50 million years. Think ahead and ask yourself, how will the way that I am putting those resources, God's resources, how will the way I'm putting those to use make a difference forever? I like the end of the story in Matthew 25 when God looks down at his servants and says, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. A little boy builds a sandcastle on a beach. He spends hours there. How many of you have ever built a sandcastle on a beach? All right, so you know about this, what that's like. This little boy has done it before. It's a lot of fun. He steps back and he looks at his work with satisfaction. Another sandcastle, well constructed. And then, after a while, something happens. What happens? The tide comes in, and the waves begin to lap away at the wall, and it falls down, and then they begin to wear down the sandcastle. The little boy might even help it, you know, finish it off. And pretty soon, after the waves have completely gone over it a few times, there's not even a trace that the sandcastle was ever there. And the boy just watches. He doesn't try to stop it. He just watches, because all along he knew that the tide would come in, and he didn't expect that that castle of sand would last forever. He just built it. He just enjoyed it with the understanding that it was temporary and that it was satisfying and then it would be gone. He turns around and he walks home. Somewhere just a few miles away, another boy, older, is also building a castle. And he spends hours building his. He gets up early in the mornings. He stays late. He climbs up a corporate ladder. He throws himself into it. Frankly, he's not having a lot of fun doing it, but he is highly motivated. And then he steps back and he takes a look at what he has accomplished. He isn't satisfied. And then something happens. He gets a call. He's brought into the CEO's office. The company is downsizing, and suddenly, just like the other little boy, his castle is washed away. He's devastated, though. Unlike the other little boy, he doesn't just turn around and go home. This man, he was building a temporary castle too, but he wasn't living like it. He wasn't thinking like it. And we need to learn that everything that we are building here that's a material thing is temporary. And the tide is going to come in, and there won't be a trace. Listen, you can choose to throw your whole life into all kinds of things, and at the moment, the thrill might be very satisfying, and it might seem like, oh, this is going to last forever. But at the end of the day, when the tide comes in, what's going to be left? Are you living your life for the dot or the line? The reason that people who truly are following Jesus live their lives differently is because they know that their real citizenship isn't here on earth. They know that one day everything that we see here is going to cease to even exist. So are you living for the line or the dot? Here's another good truth to put in your list of things to take home today. One of those is giving is the only antidote to materialism. Affluenza seems to be a problem in our nation. That was a new word that was coined a few years ago. Affluenza. Some of you are a little worried about influenza right now. Affluenza is defined as a psychological malaise supposedly affecting wealthy young people, symptoms of which include a lack of motivation, feelings of guilt, and a sense of isolation. Affluenza. This was the plea that was made by the attorneys of Ethan Couch after Ethan Couch went on a drunken driving spree that ended in a crash that killed 4 people and injured 9 others. Couch was on probation. You've probably seen him in the news. He fled from the country last December. He's been caught again, by the way. And now Ethan Couch is a pretty extreme example of affluenza. He's like the affluenza poster child. That's a very serious threat. What could we do to protect ourselves against the virus of materialism that affects so many people? I've got the answer from God's Word. The answer is giving. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, here's what Paul says. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Now, look at that verse for a moment. I want you to notice a couple of things. First of all, notice that wealth isn't a sin. Where does it come from? It comes from God. He gives us these things, it says, to enjoy them. He is the one who provides, and that provision can even be something in our lives that we enjoy. But there is a way to avoid making wealth the focus of our lives. It's in verse 18. Speaking about people who have wealth, it says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. You see, it doesn't matter who you are or how much you have, life that is lived for something other than yourself is the only life in this world that's ever going to be fulfilling. Amen? People realize this. People inside and outside the church are realizing it. That's why you find people joining up with causes and projects of all kinds. Because even people who don't understand about heaven understand that life isn't just about pleasing yourself. Did you hear that? When I give something away, it takes the focus off of stuff and it puts the focus more on heaven, and that is the antidote to materialism. All right, one more, number four, one last fact to take home, and that is that God blesses me not to raise my standard of living, but to raise my standard of giving. We can't disregard all of the times that God says that he'll bless our faithfulness in giving. He does say that. Luke 6:38. Get the picture that Jesus is painting here, whether it's of grain or grapes or something like that. He says, give and it will be given to you, a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Now, I'm not sure what that is, but it sounds like a lot, doesn't it? All right, 2 Corinthians 9, verse 10, Paul said, now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. Paul's promising them that God's going to reward their faithful giving. But the reason, do you notice this? The reason for that blessing is always, always so that we can be a blessing to others. That's what's so neat about this. It's that way all through Scripture. Way back in Genesis chapter 12, God is calling out a man named Abram, calling him to leave his family, his roots. Verse 1 of chapter 12, the Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. Here are his promises. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. Whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. God gave Abram a new name, Abraham. And he gave him all sorts of blessings, just like he promised. Wealth, children, a legacy that lives, by the way, right up to this very present day. But you know, God was blessing Abraham, and what he was doing through and for Abraham was much, much bigger than just Abraham. The Jewish nation descended from Abraham. And God brought his son Jesus Christ into the world through that Jewish nation. And Jesus lived a perfect life and gave that perfect life as a sacrifice for your lives and mine. So through Abraham, all the peoples on the earth can be blessed. You see that? That is God's economy. He blesses us so that our level of blessing will become a blessing to others. Every day I keep watching the way that people who don't know Jesus are afraid to die. You know, if you want to market something and sell it, just show how it will keep you young. Or somehow it will add years to your life so that instead of living to be 84, you'll live to be 87. As if that was really important. Well, it is. If that's all you have to live for, this life. Too many people are afraid to die. Why is that? Well, a lot of people lay up their treasures on earth. And what that means about every one of us every day is one day closer to our death, aren't we? And what that means is if your treasure is all about what's here on earth, every day of your life, you are backing a little farther away from your treasure. Jesus says that's exactly the opposite of how we should live. That we ought to turn that around. That if our treasures are laid up in heaven, then every day of this life that we are closer to being in heaven, we're not backing away from our treasure. What are we doing? We're getting closer and closer. If you spend your life backing away from your treasures, knowing that one day they're going to be completely lost to you, what joy is there in that? What gain is there in that? person who spends his life moving towards his treasure, that's a person who has a reason to rejoice. Life in Jesus is the only way that you can be sure that's the direction that you're headed. Are you listening? All of this talk about treasure in heaven and all of this talk about a guaranteed return from your investment makes sense only if you're sure that one day you're going to be in heaven. Are you sure? There was a rich young ruler who came to Jesus. He wanted to be sure that he'd live in heaven one day. So he asked Jesus what he needed to do. He was a rich young ruler. He had lots of money. Actually, the money was ruling him. And in his case, Jesus told him, here's what you need to do. You need to ditch your money, and you need to come follow me, and you'll have treasure in heaven. And we read there after that, that young man, rather than investing in what lasts, turned around and left Jesus very sad because he had great wealth. And I wonder this morning where you're at in that picture. I wonder this morning if you'll leave here very sad or if you'll leave here a person who's rejoicing because every day you're getting closer and closer to what you're really living for. That's the difference between somebody who knows Jesus Christ and is following him and somebody who hasn't made that decision yet. And this is the part where I said, we're going to ask you today to make that choice. If you haven't given your life to Jesus, I hope you see why that's the only way that life can be a fulfilling and happy life. If you were a completely selfish person, that'd be a good reason to give your life to Jesus. Maybe this morning you've thought about that and you're saying, you know, it's time that Jesus is my Lord and not just a name to me. That Jesus is the person I follow and not just something that's good for everybody else. That Jesus is the one I'm living for. We hope that you'll make that choice. Won't you please stand up with me and let's pray together as we enter into a time today for making decisions, and let's consider making an investment that will last.